You're listening to the Flip Houses Like a Girl podcast, where we educate, empower, and celebrate everyday women who are facing their fears, juggling family and business, embracing their awesomeness, and wholeheartedly chasing their dream of flipping houses. Each episode delivers honest-to-goodness tools, tips, and strategies you can implement today to get closer to your first or next successful house flip. Here's your spiky-haired, breakfast taco-loving host, house flipping coach, Debbie DeBeery.
Hey, you guys. You know the drill by now. Whatever you're up to today, I hope you're having an easy one. Thank you so much for carving out a little time to hang out with me. So first off, I want to do a listener shout out because I freaking love hearing from you guys. Thank you so much. It totally makes my day and it lets me know that I'm not just sitting here talking to myself most days. Well, maybe I am sitting here talking to myself most days, but not necessarily on the podcast. So there's that. All right, you guys, thank you again so much. So this listener shout out goes out to Lili Chi. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it the way you intended, but that's the name. That's the username. Anyway, it says, she's a breath of fresh air. I love Debbie's podcast so much. She's so encouraging and positive and genuinely wants you to succeed. It's so refreshing to have an experienced and competent woman talking about flipping and investing in real estate. Each episode is packed with useful information and virtual high fives. I love that. I can't wait to get started on this adventure, especially after hearing the Adele Tan episode, since I'm also in SoCal. Thank you, Debbie. Thank you so much for this awesome review. I love it. I love the virtual high fives. I'm all over that. So thank you very much for taking time out of your day and giving us some feedback. I appreciate it. All right. I'm excited to share with you this conversation I had with a local woman who at the age of 45 decided she was going to leave her cush corporate job of 20 years and become a GC. Isn't that awesome? I freaking love it. So this episode has a lot of nuggets in it, but mostly it has this one big lesson of you can pivot any time you decide you want to pivot. Stop letting other people tell you what you can and cannot do or when you can and cannot do it, and especially yourself. I talk to even 30-somethings who say they feel like they're too old to pivot, and it just blows my mind. You guys, we've got one life here. We're not promised days. We're not promised tomorrow. As hokey as it sounds, seriously, change your limiting beliefs and do what you freaking want to do. All right, so without further ado, let's get into this conversation with Christy Copeland of The Fix-It Chick here in Austin. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today because I know that your story is going to inspire people and educate them and encourage them and empower them. And that's what we're all about. So,
Well, I hope so. Awesome.
Okay. So why don't you just give us a little bit of your background, like a little bit about who you are? I know I don't always love that question because it's like, yeah. I have so many stories I could share, but you in a little nutshell. By
the way, the poster behind you. With the neighborhoods, I have that in my office.
I love it. I love it so much.
Me too. My office is not very quiet though, and my dog walker is coming in a little bit, so that's why I'm holed up in my bedroom in the back of the house. So
that's awesome.
Anywho, yeah, I know. So I'm like, I was born a poor white child in a small town in the middle of a cornfield in the Midwest.
Wait, were you really?
Yeah. Well, I mean. Not literally in a cornfield. Yeah. I was born in a hospital, but yeah. A very small town in the Midwest.
Wow.
And surrounded by corn. I'm from Illinois. So, yeah, grew up, knew and I wanted to get the heck out of Dodge. But we, you know, we were totally middle class. And So, you know, we didn't have a ton of money for, my parents never hired anybody, right? Like if there was any work to be done, my dad did it.
Yeah.
So if it was fixing something, or even when we put our pool in, he and his buddy Jerry went out there and God forbid they read instructions. Let's dig a hole, you know, and they figured it out as they went along. But my dad's a mechanical engineer. So he's, you know, I kind of get that. And then my mom's super creative. Like she was Martha Stewart before Martha Stewart even thought about being Martha Stewart.
That's awesome.
So I kind of got that good balance of both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was an artist and I went off to college and I got my degree in music and then decided I like to eat. So I went to work for the phone company. Did that. Well, I was in marketing, sales and then marketing. And I did that for 14 or 15 years. And then I got the whole, you know, .com thing got big. And so I moved from Dallas down to Austin 20 years ago and did the whole .com thing for 10 years and finally have had enough of that. And sitting in my office one day and was like, somebody's going down and it ain't going to be me.
There you go.
I just started thinking, what can I do for a living? And I just made a list of things that I thought I could do and that I could monetize. And then when I landed on this, I wrote a business plan and there you go. So started at the depths of the Great Recession and nowhere to go but up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when I started flipping houses.
Yeah,
you can't do that exactly. In this market. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks. You can't start a business now. Okay. Pardon? The whole, you can't start a business right now. You can't flip houses in this market. Nobody's building anything. Okay.
Right. Or you're 45. What do you mean you're going to just start your own company? What? That's,
yes. So,
yeah.
Okay. So let's.
That's kind of the long and short of that.
So, all right. So you're 45. You were 45 when you made this decision.
Let's just say I'm 45 now.
Sure.
No, yeah, I was 45 then.
And you, I want to know, did you have some naysayers? Did you have some people saying, like, what are you doing?
Only my mother was the naysayer, and that's her MO. Like, just as a bit of background. So in 2002, I moved to Budapest for about a year and a half. And it, long story, but I'd gone there on a consulting gig and met a guy and fell in love and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. And well, I'm not living there. So clearly that didn't happen. But everybody was like, Christy, what a great opportunity. And you're so lucky. And what a great, exciting adventure. Except my mother, who was like, are you crazy? I'm like, okay. So then I was like 38, 39 when I moved there. I'm like, call it a midlife crisis. I don't know. But then when I decided to up and, you know, leave the corporate world with all those cushy, juicy benefits and, you know, money and everybody again was like, oh my gosh, girl, you can do it. I'm so proud of you. I mean, who knows what they were really thinking in private, but my mother says those things, but I don't know. I just took it with a grain of salt and, you know, cause she just wants me to be safe and just wants me to be taken care of. It's not because she didn't think I couldn't, you know, but you know, they're children of the depression. So they're like, ooh, steady paycheck. What, you know? So I go from, you know, big fat juicy paycheck to 100% commission overnight.
Right. Okay. So
but all my friends, everybody was super supportive and
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that? Like, can you define a certain point where you were like, I can't do this? Okay. So there's a very clear moment where you were done.
Yeah. And you know, people say, you don't know until you know, right? But people would say, yeah, there was that time when I knew, and I just knew.
Yeah.
I was actually sitting in my office in, it was March of 2009. And I said to my assistant, I said, I think I'm having a heart attack. I'm going to go to the emergency room.
Oh,
and it was more like I just had this really weird, uncomfortable, I can't even describe it, feeling. So I get to the emergency room. And she's, well, first of all, she's like, do you want me to drive you? I'm like, oh, no, no, no. I'll be fine. It was like this weird out-of-body experience I was having. Wow. So I go to the emergency room and he's like, you are not having a heart attack. You are having a panic attack.
Oh my gosh.
And so they do the stress test. I do all the stuff. And he says, you've got the heart of a 25-year-old. I'm like, so then what's the what? Uh-huh. He said, it's stress. It's going to kill you, but it's stress. I'm like, all right. So March of 2009 is when I started, the wheels started turning. And I was like, I got to have an exit plan. I've got to get out of here. And so that's when I started, literally sat down and made a list. Dog groomer, hairdresser, florist, anything that I thought I'd enjoy, uh-huh. right? I mean, uh-huh. greeter at Walmart, yeah. you know, it was like all of these, because I just wanted to check out. Yeah. I did not want responsibility. I was as high as I was ever going to go, director mm-hmm. level. And it was, you know, the stress and you're only as good as your last touchdown. And like, but I just made you $5 million. Well, what can you do for us now? And, you know, just that ongoing, no, nothing is ever good enough. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, that gets so exhausting.
It's exhausting. It's mentally exhausting. Yeah. And my mom would call me like on a Saturday night. Hey, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, I'm sitting at my dining room table on my laptop working on a spreadsheet, Mom. You know, she's like, you're killing yourself. And it's that was that aha moment that I'm like, when the doctor's like, it's stress, it'll kill you. I'm like, what am I doing this for?
Yeah.
What am I? I don't have children. I'm not married, but gee, I'd like to have a life.
Right.
So anywho, so I sat down, made that list, and then just started whittling it down to, okay, these are all nice, but what can I actually do that would make me a living?
Uh-huh.
And that's when I got down to this, and I had always done this for fun.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my homes were always my projects, and my friends would hire me, and then they would refer me to other people. So I was really kind of doing it, but not in a formal or the fashion that it is now, you know.
Sure.
And so it just took off, and I just put out an email to like some animal welfare groups that I'd been working with. And I said, hey, I'll come do stuff at the shelter and give you 10% off. And I was like, 10% off of what? I don't know. Cause I didn't have a pricing structure. I was just making up.
I love it.
And, but I went out there and then, you know, word of mouth, word of mouth, word of mouth. I've never advertised. I've just had referrals, repeat business. So
that's awesome. From March 2009.
Yeah, then I finally left. Uh-huh. I gave them my notice. It was my birthday in October. Mm-hmm. And that was the day I gave them my notice.
Okay.
And I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We were working on the 2010 plan. I said, I will do the budgets. I will do the org charts. I will do the whole marketing plan. I'll do all the stuff. I'll make a transition plan, you know, for me leaving. I don't want to be that person who walks away and leaves this pile of, you know, garbage. And I don't want them going, oh, that Christy, she screwed us, blah, blah, blah. You know, because it's always easy to throw the person who's gone under the bus.
Sure.
Like not having that because I built up too much of a reputation. So I worked out that plan and I gave them a 6-week plan and I left around the end of November of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went home and slept for a month, literally. And then I went on a cruise with my friends and then I came back and figured it out.
Yeah. Jumped in.
Yeah, pretty much feet first, cold water.
That's sometimes the best way to do it. So
the only way I knew how. Yeah. I didn't know any other way.
Sure. So you decide, all right, I'm going to be a GC, whatever that means. I'm just mm-hmm. going to figure it out. So you just started. I love the way you started. I love that you reached out to animal shelters that you were already like volunteering for.
Yeah, because I knew they needed the help and there were things that I needed to do that kind of I was already doing, but I'm like, oh, you need that. I mean, I did everything, tiling, put up light fixtures, hang ceiling fans. Here, you need a backsplash? Okay. Found out I'm really no good at plumbing. I don't have the upper body strength to move a wrench. I don't know. But, you know, just, and then my, over time, you know, I built up a team of guys. Hey, I need a guy to do this. I need somebody to do that. And, mm-hmm. you know, you go through, I went through potheads and meth heads and drunks and people who just don't show up and or people who tried to mansplain to me. And I was like, don't even. And it just over time, you know, I just found people and I built up my team. And now most of them have been with me since, you know, for at least 10 years. I've been to all their kids' quinceañeras and I help them with their taxes and, you know, they're family to me. And that's so awesome. I've built up a core group of people who are super dependable, who are family guys, who, you know, I get comments all the time about, God, they were so tidy. They were so respectful, which you think is really minor.
Right.
But I've heard so many horror stories where just guys leave, you know, junk all over the. So anyway, so I built up my teams and not to say that it's always been easy, but, you know, and then even my subs, plumbers, electricians, HVAC, anything that requires licenses, I've built relationships with those guys. They're the only ones I use on my projects. So it's tons of continuity. And so I don't even know now how long it's been since I actually had to tile something, but now it's project management. So I love the design part. I love helping a client go from idea in their head to visualization of what this is really going to do, the benefit that it's going to give them in terms of extra functionality, extra storage, et cetera. And then, you know, doing the project and managing all the bazillion and 12 details that Joe homeowner would shoot themselves in the head before they ever thought about doing that. I tell people all the time, I'm like, never try to do this with your spouse and stay married. Not going to happen.
As an aside, you were talking about licensed subs and stuff.
Yeah.
So Texas used to have a GC license. So you've been a GC long enough where you were actually licensed by Texas.
No, I've never had a license. No.
Wow. It's been that long. I thought it was like,
well, unless I was screwed myself and didn't have one and didn't know any better. But I mean, I tried to do my homework and my due diligence, but I couldn't find any licensing body. Yeah. I mean, you have to have a license to be an official interior designer.
Right.
Well, you have to have the credentials and the training. You have to, if you're going to do, you know, the plumbing and the HVAC and all that.
Right.
And I'm smart enough to know like where my skill set ends.
Yeah.
And, you know, just going through the process and learning, it's like, oh, you're putting yourself at risk if you don't do that.
Right.
And then, you know, even, you know, finding a good attorney and getting a good contract, because I kind of left myself wide open on some things. And so, you know, just building all that in and getting insurance and just becoming a real live grown up, you know, and having this reputable company that people can depend on to not just be some fly by night, any bubba with a hammer can call himself a contractor, you know?
Yeah.
So, did I just meander through the woods there too much?
No. So one of the things that often concerns me is I love this DIY movement. Okay. I think it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What concerns me is when people who are renovating houses, not for themselves, but for, you know, to fix up and flip and make a profit.
Right.
When they're DIYing a lot of things and they don't really fully know what they're doing and they're kind of winging it.
I run into a lot of those that I have to fix.
Okay. So, but like, I feel like liability wise, like one of the big things I hear, one of the big objections or concerns is I really want to flip houses. I don't want to put myself at too much risk. And and then they're like, but I want to save money, so I'm going to DIY it. And I'm like, you don't want risk and you're going to do the renovation work yourself. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Do you have any, words of wisdom. Do you have any advice for people? Because I think that's a really big topic right now.
Well, I mean, and HGTV is wonderful. The DIY network is wonderful because it's really it's really helped my industry. It's really helped my business more ways than it has hurt it, because people also see, they see what can be done, but then they also see, gosh, that should be easy, or unreasonable expectations. Like, I was watching a show which will not be named, but it's based here in Texas and they're a very adorable couple, but the husband was saying, oh, we'll do this tankless water heater. That ought to be $2,500. And I'm like screaming at the television, in what world? In what world is that $2,500? You know, it's just, it's unreasonable. So when I've come, people have bought a house that has been flipped, mm-hmm. especially in neighborhoods like Brentwood, Crestview, Wooten. You know, I go in there and I'm like, oh Lord, they slapped lipstick on a pig.
Yes.
And tile is literally falling off their wall, or why is there water leaking out everywhere? Because somebody flipped it and put tile on top of green board, or worse, sheetrock.
Oh,
hey, all of your plumbing is galvanized from the 50s, hooked onto cast iron from the God knows when, hooked up to copper, and there's all of this corrosion, and now you've got gray water making caverns under your house for the last 20 years.
Oh,
and
gosh.
You know, you're, everything's disintegrating, and oh, your house needs leveled. I mean, so a $70,000 project can turn into a $100,000 project overnight.
Sure.
Because you go in and you find out your plumbing is just, you know, either they didn't get it inspected. That's probably the number one thing. I would never buy a house that has been flipped that was done without permits.
Yeah.
And anymore, if I drive around and I'll see a house that's getting done and a bunch of trucks parked outside and it's in the same neighborhood as one of mine and I don't see a permit in the window, boom, somebody's getting a phone call.
It
can be dangerous.
I totally agree with that. It absolutely can be dangerous. It absolutely can. And when your name is attached to that project, that's a little scary.
That's a little scary. And I mean, so maybe this guy's thinking, hey, I'll do it. I'll get in. I'll make my money. I'll get out. No one will be the wiser. But I just figured karma is going to catch up with you. And I don't want anybody to get hurt. So my words of advice are, yes, you can do it yourself, but educate yourself, right?
Right.
Don't slap tile on top of green board or drywall. Learn how to make a waterproof shower or tub surround or whatever you're building. Learn about pipe sizes. I mean, even if you hire a plumber, and I depend on my plumbers and my subs to know their stuff, and they are licensed masters and they've got a reputation, but that doesn't mean my responsibility stops. I learn from them.
Sure.
I find out about why you can't do it this way or why you should do it that way.
Right.
You know, so a lot of education goes on, so that when I am talking to a client who says, but I saw it on an HGTV show, why can't I do it this way? Or, I did my plumbing myself. Let me show you what I did. And I'm like, you might not want to do that. You know? So knowing what you're getting yourself into, realizing the risk that's involved with it, and educating yourself on building codes. There's books out there that you can get. You can go to the city. They will help you. It's cumbersome, but they will help you. Learning. Oh my gosh. I trial baptism by fire, whatever you want to call it. Just going, learning the city's permitting process and that whole thing, because they'll say, okay, we got this easy to use website. No, you don't.
No,
no, you don't. I used to do that for a living. No, you don't. You do not have an easy to navigate website. It is a lot of trouble. And then being able to communicate that to a homeowner, that's your value add, right? You can get some guy who just swings a hammer, but if you want it done right, A, you got to pay for it, and B, you have to have somebody who's put the time in, who's done the homework, who will go down to the city and who will sit there for 4 hours and go through that drama with the folks down there.
Yeah.
So, believe me, the people who I've worked with at the city, I don't hold them responsible for the ineptitude of the process right. because they're lovely. And I've had nothing but wonderful experiences working with the individuals in the development office. It's just the bureaucracy around it that can be very confusing
right.
and very intimidating.
Yes. And frustrating. Absolutely. Wholeheartedly absolutely. Get that. Yeah.
Yeah. We all sit down there in the lobby while we're waiting to be called and you see the same people all the time,
yeah. uh-huh.
architects, designers, builders. And it's, we call it group therapy because we're just all complaining about the same thing.
So are there common mistakes that you're seeing DIYers make, or is it just in general, there's just lots of mistakes?
So in general, there's lots of mistakes, just kind of sloppy work, which,
yeah.
you know, like drywalling, for example, that's an art.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can put up sheetrock. I've seen some very nasty cuts that look like badgers chewed on the edges. I'm like, get a knife and get a new blade, you know, simple stuff like that. And then drywalling, like the texture application, that really is an art and you got to practice.
Yeah.
You know, because I've seen some really bad DIY patches and things like that. But, restate your question, could you?
Just like top mistakes that you see DIYers make.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the one that I mentioned before about tiling.
Yes.
Take some classes, look at some DIY or YouTube videos, mm-hmm. you know, use mm-hmm. spacers, use a leveler, use mm-hmm. the proper tools. Mm-hmm. That to me is just common sense, but uh-huh. I even watched a very camera ready woman who has her own show based in Michigan,
uh-huh.
Putting tile on the wall, and she's no spacers, nothing. And she turns around and no leveling, no starter board or anything like that. And she turns around and says to the camera, "Does this look level to you?" I'm like, "Oh, girl, you didn't even."
That's the problem. That's the
problem. Yeah, and they're like, they make it just look so simple. You just slap this towel on the wall,
right? You
know, and the proper steps to waterproof it, etc.
Yes.
And so, you know, everything from the simple stuff to, like I said, the permit. So the some electrical things.
Oh gosh.
You can't just run Romex from your porch to your garage. You just can't string it up. You know, you're putting yourself at risk. There's this stuff called conduit, and there's, you know, proper procedure for that that keeps you safe and not burning your house down.
Oh my gosh.
You know, so I see a lot of that. We've opened up walls where people have done their own quote unquote wiring, and I literally found extension cords in walls.
No.
I found it in attics, just running things, you know, like we needed light over in this room, so I just tied onto this and I just ran this, or and that's in rural areas where there aren't necessarily there's no permits even required to in town. Stuff that people have just done that they probably knew better.
Oh gosh.
Not doing a junction box, just, you know, taping some wires together and using wire nuts and all of that exposed in an attic. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's usually a plumbing or an electrical thing that I've run into.
Hire licensed professionals. Don't be cheap.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Don't be cheap. It's like that old saying or that meme that you see a lot, or I see it a lot. If you think it's expensive to hire a professional, just wait till you hire an amateur.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Then it's really good. Or my other favorite is, can you do this cheaper? Well, no, if you want it done right.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, it is what it is.
You know? Yeah.
Like they were going along and we're doing, you know, the big surprise is when you're doing a project, especially a large scale project, is you find them during demo and the walls come down.
Right.
That's when you're going to see electrical, plumbing, HVAC, and the horror that is behind your wall.
Right.
I've taken down sheetrock and found studs riddled with termite damage.
Or
water damage. And I'm like, how's the wall even standing?
Right. You know?
But they're like, well, isn't there a cheaper way to fix that? I'm like, Not if you want your wall to stay up, you know? Not if you want the poop to drain out of the drain and go to the sewer. Right. No, there's only one way to do it, you know? But so I tell everybody, listen, you know, here's the estimate. I write it out. I detail it. But there's always that caveat. We don't know what's behind the wall until we get there.
Right.
But I also make a point. We don't do anything until we talk to the homeowner and say, hey, buddy, we run into X. Now, here are the possible solutions, A, B, or C. Mm-hmm. Here are the costs associated with that. Sometimes it's only A, right? There is only one solution.
Yeah.
You know, the poop has to leave your house. You have to have that pipe. It has to work. I can't divert it into a bucket for you. Sorry. So that's not too graphic for your show.
I like graphic.
Okay. Well, as my plumber says, Christy, we'll take care of the shitty. You take care of the pretty.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So we deal with a lot of you. Before I ever do a bathroom job, especially in a house built in the 80s or older, I have the plumbers come out. They run the camera. We find out it's like a colonoscopy for your house.
Yep.
You see everything. There are no secrets between you and me anymore, Mr. Client. I see your toilet. I see what you have flushed down that toilet, and it's there. Because we want to look for tree roots or fatbergs or especially kitchen people. Oh man, Lord, they wash all kinds of crap down their kitchen sink and all every little bit of bacon grease or cooking oil or whatever. It creates a fatberg.
Yep.
And then you get poop bergs and baby wipes.
Oh, gosh.
I don't care how flushable they say they are. Right. They're not.
Yep. Yeah. So I know. I've seen, there was some documentary I was watching about those flushable adult wipes. And it was disgusting. Disgusting.
Yep.
I was like, oh, my gosh.
And do you think it's disgusting just to see it? I mean, it's fascinating and cool and disgusting all at the same time because they run the camera and we watch it on the video.
Right.
And there's sometimes I'm like, oh, look away, look away. Yeah. But I, luckily, am not the person who has to clean that out.
Right.
And those plumbers, man, they earn their money.
Man, last job I want is that. Last job.
And you know, I'll do older houses like in Hyde Park, and a lot of them are on pier and beam.
Yeah.
And they've got to crawl under the house. I'm like, these critters living under there, dead critters under there. And I don't do that. Again, electricians and plumbers earn every penny, especially when they're crawling around in those attics and under the houses.
Oh,
and,
right.
You know.
Amen to that. What are some of your favorite ways or things maybe you suggest to homeowners that they can add good value to their house pretty inexpensively?
That's a really good question. And I actually get that a lot. Paint is going to be the cheapest thing you can do to make the biggest impact in the shortest amount of time. Whether it's interior or exterior paint, exterior, especially because it, I mean, it's protective, right?
Yeah.
Depending on where you are in Austin, if your house was built in the 70s or the 80s, they use that crap masonite, basically cardboard. And if it's not maintained, water intrusion, critters chew on it. And the next thing you know, you got mold, mildew, and rotten drywall in your house, or sheetrock in your house. So paint not only is aesthetic, it's protective.
That's a good
point. a good quality paint. You know, like we particularly only use Sherwin-Williams. If from the big box stores, I would say Valspar, even more than Behr, but that's just my personal opinion.
Interesting, because of what, the coverage or the or what?
Coverage and the durability.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to
know. Even color, for example, on when especially on, if I'm doing an outside or an exterior, and a customer wants a very dark hue, which you don't, they're beautiful. Like you see those dark, dark gray houses or dark, dark blue. Or one in my neighborhood, actually, it's beautiful. They did it like this really dark charcoal with this white trim, and it's beautiful. But I'm like, oh, I hope they use good paint because Texas sun, man, that's going to beat. Yeah, it's going to beat it out of it. And you want it to last because painting your house ain't cheap.
No.
Especially a two-story. You know?
Right.
So, you know, you get what you pay for, that old adage. And by the same token, on the interior, doors and trim and baseboards, door trim, you always want to use an oil, especially if you got kids. And it's going to clean up easier. It's easier to scrub clean. Never, God, never use flat paint unless it's on a ceiling. I'd like to make flat paint against the law. a lot of these builders, the volume builders, go in and they spray and it's just flat paint and you're never going to get that clean.
Oh, gosh.
Unless you want to run around touching up your paint all the time.
Yeah,
but
no.
The same token on the inside with fading, just because it's what you put out, what you get in the can and you put it on the wall, time, heat, temperature, humidity. If you don't want to be repainting your house every few years, and durability, you know, use a good quality paint. Always use a primer. Don't use primer in a paint. The paint that's got it in the primer, it's never as good as priming the walls first.
That's what I hear.
A lot of these walls are super dry. A lot of the homes that I go into haven't been painted for years, and it sucks up the paint like a sponge. And so if you don't want to waste money on expensive paint, then spend the money on good primer.
Are there any common misconceptions that homeowners have about renovating their house? Maybe time frame, or obviously money. Money's always a big thing. That's more than I thought it would be. But aside from that, are there some common misconceptions you come across?
I think the biggest two are time and money, and the disruption to their lives. So that's why when I meet with a client, especially a kitchen, I mean, that's the heart of your home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I try to prepare them for, some people are awesome. Like, man, they've set up the Instapot and the Crock-Pot and the microwave and the coffee maker and they've got it. And they, you know, they got life to live. And some people are just completely clueless. Yeah. So, you know, making accommodations, and I try to give my clients realistic timelines. Like, I give, I know you're going to fall over and die, a schedule to my clients.
What? That you actually stick to?
I mean, I'm a project manager. That's what we do.
That's crazy talk.
I think it's incumbent on the project manager, the GC, to do that. And so before we start the project, I kind of give them the overview of, this is how the project's going to roll out. This is the overview of what's going to happen this week, this week, this week, this week. And then as we get into the project, okay, here's the nitty gritty. This is what's going to happen this week. This is what you should be prepared for. And like, for example, we're doing this kitchen reno right now, and I let the homeowners know, hey, Tuesday and Wednesday, the plumbers are going to be there and we're going to be jackhammering the slab. You need to take this stuff off the walls. You need to probably be out of the house, you know, that kind of stuff. And so just trying to give them as much information as possible so that they can live while this is going on.
Right.
Very rarely do I have a client who's like, I'm just going to move out for 3 months.
That would be nice, right?
Well, it does happen. It does
and
happen.
Take all your stuff with
and
you.
Take all your stuff with you. I had one client, she was a hoot. She was from Switzerland originally, and she goes back every year for a couple weeks. So we spent like 3 months planning her fancy kitchen. And then she's like, okay, I'm leaving you with this chunk of money. And when I come back, let's have it done. And I'm like, great. Because
that's awesome.
She didn't have to see how the sausage was made. She didn't have to live through all the dust.
Right.
And, you know, we could work 12 hours a day because no one was there. And she comes home and it's like, for her, it was like a TV show.
Right. It was. You could have a big reveal and everything.
Yeah. So, you know, try to give as much information about the schedule and the time it's going to take. And I'd rather under promise and over deliver. So I'm going to cushion it. If I think it's really 6 weeks, I'm going to tell them 8.
Yeah.
I think it's really four. I'm going to tell them six.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course the money. Now when I am giving my estimates, I make sure that I'm very clear. This is an estimate because you don't know what's going to happen. But as we go along in the process, and it's all about communication, you get clearer and clearer on what the expectations are. And then just keeping track of the money and communicating. So for example, I give weekly statements to my clients. So nothing on that statement should be a surprise. If we added or subtracted any work, that's going to be on there and they'll already know about it. Any payments that they make, it's on there. Clearly they know about it. They made the payment. So just being as transparent as absolutely possible.
And everything, just communicate. Absolutely. Everything you do in life, just communicate.
Yeah. Don't make assumptions. I'll go into people's homes and they'll have had the most beautiful master bathroom, but then they call me and they want me to do their kitchen or vice versa. Right. And I'm like, but that's beautiful. Why are you not using that person? You're like, oh, we love the result, but we hated the process. There was no clear communication.
Yeah.
Never get a hold of our contractor. We never knew when they were coming. They left the house a mess. They let my dog out, you know, just all that stuff.
And gosh.
You know, just all this drama that could be easily averted by just paying attention and doing your job and being a professional.
Right. Yeah. Do you have, like, I think you mentioned earlier your favorite parts are really the design piece and kind of managing the whole process.
Yeah. I like that, right? To be the circus, the ringleader of the circus.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Are there any parts that you just despise?
Dysfunctional people who have mental issues, and boy, that's a lot of people. I am not paid enough to be your marriage counselor or your personal counselor. And I mean, is it because I'm a woman? I don't know.
Right. But probably.
Maybe so, but it's, I've had to learn, I'm a very outgoing, gregarious person, but I have had to establish boundaries.
Yeah. That's hard.
It is hard. It's hard for me because I want people to love me of course. I want them to love the process and I want them to refer me to other people. But at the same time, I'm still doing this for a living, you know, and I am not, after 500 something clients, I could write a book on crazy people, and learning the signs like, ooh, I'm going to have to walk away from this one, or I better not take this job kind of thing.
So being willing to say no.
Being willing to say no is very hard. And every time I think I learned that lesson, I find out, oh, I got a little more to learn on some of that.
With your sister. Yeah.
And because in not letting people honestly take advantage of you, I think people hire me because I'm a woman and they assume I am more detail-oriented, which in my case is true. Because I do love working with the clients. I do love the nitty-gritty. I love planning all the details. Down to what's your organizer in your silverware drawer going to be, you know? So from major to minor, but at the same time, I think because I personally am more probably gregarious and empathetic, I don't know if people consciously try to take advantage of that or they just assume they could take advantage of it because I'm a woman and less necessarily maybe gruff or standoffish as your typical male contractor.
I can see that it would be a benefit to be a female contractor just because, like, sexism goes both ways, right? So a female contractor, I think, she's going to pay attention to the details. She's going to communicate better. She's going to care more. She's going to show up. I do think those things.
And I use that to my advantage, right?
Use what you got. Do you have any tips for women who are either interested in becoming GCs for, you know, other people, or women who are wanting to get into flipping houses, so managing their own projects? Do you have any?
I wish I had more advice or advice to pass on about the financing side of that, because I don't, you know, I spend other people's money.
Yeah.
Judiciously, but I do that. But just from a practical standpoint, having business acumen has served me immeasurably. Sometimes I think, gosh, I wish I would have started this 30 years ago, but I wouldn't have the business background that I have now, you know? So don't assume that just because you're good at something, painting or
making things pretty,
that you're a good business person.
Right.
No. Like my painter, great painter, been doing it for 30 years, can't manage his way out of a paper bag. I'm like, get a freaking calendar, you know?
Right.
So having that set of skills, and primarily it's organization and time management. Those are the two biggest, and I think most important things that anybody can have in this business. Because it's all about managing a project and being able to time things so that you can have a consistent cash flow.
Because
I think a lot of people fail early on because, you know, you get this big influx of cash all at once, but you got to know how that's going to pan out over, you know, the next 3 months, and keeping things in your pipeline. So being able to manage an existing project and all of the bazillion details, or the 11 million details that go with that, all while trying to go out and win other business and then manage that without getting overextended and losing your mind. Which I've done. So organization, organization skills and time management are the two biggest skills that you need to be successful.
I'm going to add communication to that. I think you're totally right. Otherwise, I mean, it's just like, here's the thing. The beauty is, if you don't have those things, you can absolutely get educated and get training to get those things.
Or hire a sub who can do those things, but you still have to manage them and you have to communicate with them.
Find someone to be on your team that can do those things. But just being, just saying it's okay, I don't have those things, that's not okay.
And being able to find the people who can, and also not making assumptions. Because it's, when you're doing a design for someone, it really helps to, and this is the communication part, getting to know that person, paying attention when you go in their home and you see how they live and you see what their challenges are, or you see what their style is like, because you're not imposing your aesthetic on someone else. You're helping them express their aesthetic or develop their aesthetic. Because some people don't even, I mean, like if I gave somebody a quiz and said, are you neo farmhouse? Are you shabby chic? Are you traditional? They don't know. I mean, they have no idea, because I've seen all these quizzes and all these stupid websites. Just go in and talk to people and you see what it is, and then you can help direct them down the path that they need to go down to get the result that they say that they want at the very beginning. Makes sense?
Makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Is there anything else you want to say before we end the call? I'm trying to be mindful of our time together.
I appreciate that. Anything else I want to say? Always work with a contract.
Yes, ma'am.
It protects you and it protects your client.
Yes.
Payment schedules. I if it's going to be a 3-month project and I know about how much it's going to cost, I, you know, I've got my 10% down payment. Mm-hmm. It's a non-refundable, holds dates on my calendar. Then mm-hmm. I do a payment schedule based over those next 12 weeks. Customers are comfortable with payment schedules. They know what to expect. It's not a right. big surprise when you come to them for payment. A lot of people are uncomfortable asking for money. I'm like, I'm not. This is what I do for a living. I'm right. working my ass off and you're going to yeah. pay me. You know,
yeah, you can't keep the project going without
yeah,
money.
I'm like, you know, and I just always found that odd when people ask for money or, oh, how much, whatever you think. No, not whatever you think. This is how much it is. You know,
it is so what it is.
It is what it is. And so, yeah. you know, just to me, all that's encompassed under organization and management skills, but, you know, protecting yourself and having that in writing, it goes a long way to giving that customer that sense of security.
Yeah.
And then also absolutely. Being insured. So I have $2 million liability policy. Thank yes. you, God. I've never had to use it, but I never want to have to use it.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, honestly, I'm glad you brought up insurance because that's another way that I see these people skimping.
Oh, heck
it's
yeah.
like, oh, I don't want to. I'm even over the years of being an investor, I've even seen people skimp on title insurance, like yeah. to a $300,000 property they're buying. And right. I'm like, you're trying to save $1,000 and I mean, until you have a title issue, you're going to be like, oh, that's fine. It's dumb because title yeah. insurance saved me about $80,000.
I mean, I don't love spending $2,700. I could do a lot of other things with $2,700, right. but
yeah, you have to have insurance.
You
yeah.
gotta have insurance.
Oh my gosh, don't be cheap.
It's gonna come back and bite you in the butt if
yes,
you don't.
Yes, yes. Oh my God, so important.
And that's all part of being a grown-up and all part of being a professional.
It's adulting.
It's adulting, and sometimes adulting's hard. And, you know, and when customers say, why do things cost so much? Well, it's your job as the professional to explain that to them and explain it to them as a benefit. It protects right. them.
It does, yeah. So. Absolutely. Well, that's a great note to end on right there. Insure
the
yourself.
According
people.
To the fix it chick. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. Insure yourself.
Christy, you're awesome. I'm so grateful for you spending time with me and sharing part of your story and just giving us so much insight that you did. Thank you.
Oh, gosh, thank you. I am so thrilled that somebody wanted to know and that you even exist. Thank you yeah. for doing this so that people will learn because, I mean, yeah. girls gotta, you know, support other girls. Yes. I'm still a girl. I don't care how old I am.
Girl power.
Thanks a bunch, Debbie.
You're awesome. I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Sure, I appreciate you.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, you guys. I hope that you got so much value out of that conversation with the Fix-It chick. And I'm pretty sure you did. I know that there were lots of little nuggets here and there. So, in closing, I want you to be sure to get on the wait list because I am about to open doors to our very first real estate investing retreat where woo-woo meets house flipping, all right? It's called Flip Your Heart Out. It's going to be in Austin, Texas, September 24th through 26th, and it's going to be unlike any REI event you've been to. I guarantee it. All right. This ain't your good old boys real estate investing event. So go get on the wait list, flipyourheartout.com. And until next time, go out there, flip houses like a girl, leave people and places better than you find them, and make it a great day. Bye, y'all.